Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the third episode of Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. Today, we're pleased to welcome our first ever in-studio guest, Josh Klubes. Josh is a member of the Fortnite esports team at the University of Maryland. And after the break, we'll discuss weekend sports, and we have a special Terrific Terrapin. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kevin Ireland, and I'm joined by...
Sam Jane.
Michael Big Mike Howes.
And Brendan Weissel. All right, we are pleased to welcome on our first ever in-studio guest. So hopefully the audio will be slightly better than some of our previous interviews. Member of the Fortnite esports team, Josh Klubes. Clap it up.
Pleasure to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
So it's a very exciting time for the esports community at the University of Maryland as we are during its inaugural season right now. And Josh, what's that been like getting started off on the first ever team?
It's been really fun, honestly. I've never really had a community like this at any stage of my gaming career. Just having a coach, having teammates, having jerseys, having a facility to go and practice to. I mean, it's been an incredible experience, I'll be honest.
So it's been a good time. It's been a new experience.
It's been a new time. Yeah. I don't know exactly how to describe it. It's just been something totally new, like never done before.
So were you on a team before, or this is like your first real actual community of
This is my first real actual community, being on a team, playing under a name, that sort of thing.
So in regards to like the facilities that you mentioned, do you play these tournaments from your dorm, or do you do it in the facilities that we have provided?
It depends on the tournament, actually. So some tournaments, the bigger tournaments, we'll play from Night Hall. I've played one tournament from Night Hall alongside my duo. There's four players on the Fortnite team. It's three, but there's like an academy team. It's one player off on the academy team. So I played with him. We got sixth. We played pretty good. The other duo from the UMD team got fifth. But in regards to the facility, I don't really play there that much. They have a facility at Ritchie where you can practice. You can go in. There's computers, you designate a time, you have your team manager sign you up for that. But as you guys know, I play most of my tournaments from my dorm.
And you were very kind to give us a little bit of a tour before the interview.
I was. You can hear me screaming at night playing the tournament.
It's true.
A little aggravating sometimes, but I have a very good setup. The Wi-Fi in my dorm is very, very good. I have a good PC. So most of my tournaments I'll play from my dorm, but if they want to broadcast it, I'll play at the facility.
And then how does the practice schedule work? Like, do you usually practice solo, or do you practice with like other people in the esports community with Maryland?
It really depends on the tournaments that are coming up, actually. So if there's a duo tournament coming up, I'll play duo scrims with my duo. Trio tournament, I'll play trios. Solos, I'll play solos. But there's no real practice schedule, just because there's no real collegiate scrim league. That's only through like third party organizers that their scrims, not collegiate. But other teams have practice schedules. We're not really a practice schedule team. Mostly other games would have designated practice times. Ours are kind of scrims run sort of whenever.
You just like text the boys, yo, hop on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, we don't have like a set schedule, but other teams do.
And you mentioned that you do most of the tournaments from your dorm room. Is that the same for the practicing, I assume? You don't get together?
Yeah, no. Other teams do. I don't. I'm just able, it's just so much easier to having to bring all your peripherals, which is your keyboard, mouse, all that to the facility that you want to play at. It's easier to just kind of do it from your dorm.
Yeah, and so you kind of talked about how, it seems as if esports is growing in a way. How now there are facilities, teams, jerseys, all that thing. What do you think, kind of created that rise of esports gaming? What made it kind of become a big thing now, where we're seeing it starting to get integrated into Division I colleges to this point?
I'd say, honestly, that there's just a growing base of people who are really into video games. And the fact that esports is becoming such a big industry, multi-billion-dollar industry, the fact that you're able to make money off tournaments, sponsors will get in on this. They think that they can get young people to, buy their products if they advertise it in certain games. Just that there's a market for people who want to watch esports and they want to take that into the collegiate scene.
Yeah, so you talked about some of the rise of that. So talk about your personal story. I know that most you know, teenagers, a lot of young kids play video games, but not many people make it to the level that you're at. So talk about when you started playing video games, when you got into Fortnite, and kind of how you're here now.
I've always been into video games ever since I was a kid. I started on the Wii, played Super Smash Bros. Not competitively or anything. And that was until, so Fortnite came out. That was my first game that I really played a lot. That was 4 or 5 years ago, I'd say. I played on my Xbox with my friends. I just really enjoyed the game. And Fortnite actually had a World Cup a few years back. There were qualifiers for that. I didn't play the game competitively at all. Most people didn't. That was kind of the first tournament. I ended up placing 1600th out of all the million of players who played on NA East, North American servers. I was 100 places off making $100. And sort of that was kind of my moment when I was like, I'm pretty good at this. I never really practiced this before. I almost made money playing a video game. Like, I can pursue this and make money playing this game, and I enjoy doing it.
Yeah, so that's actually, that answers one of my questions. I was so that's probably the moment when you realize you could potentially do this at like a next level and make something off of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, once I saw that there was a prize pool for these tournaments and that I was able to be within range of making it, only like 1 or 2 points difference, that was kind of the starting point for me.
Yeah. In regards to the coach, like, what does the coach do? I mean, I would assume that he's not like standing behind you as you're playing, be like, press this button, press this button. So what does a coach actually do for the squad?
So for me, at least, so when I play solos, I like having someone there kind of like to calm my nerves, basically tell me kind of my mats when I'm in end game, sort of these kind of small, minute details that you may miss if you don't have someone there kind of mentally coaching you. They'll VOD review your games with you, watch your film, tell you what mistakes you made, maybe that you would miss. And just having you in a call for like a tournament, they'll tell you what kind of, where you should kind of rotate to, good materials, good places to go position wise. They're not telling you a lot, but it's just kind of to have them there.
Gotcha. So it's kind of like a caddy in golf where just like another pair of eyes.
Or yeah,
like
exactly.
Like a second opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
You said this is your first ever time playing with a coach, right? You didn't have a coach when you were playing before.
No.
Did you say like overall it's a positive or negative? Like, do you like having someone in your ear?
I love having someone in my ear just to kind of tell me things that I wouldn't know myself. Keep me mentally steady, I would say, is pretty important, especially in Fortnite. But yeah, I really enjoy having someone to be able to go through my games, see mistakes that I wouldn't see. I really think it could take you to the next level.
Yeah, in terms of what you talked about being like a student of the game and looking at film, what's that process like?
You go through, you'll watch a replay of your game. You'll take notes while you watch. Think about what you could have done better, why you got killed. You'll watch why you got any damage taken. You'll see what could I have done differently. Just kind of take notes, understanding what you could have done better is the most important part of it.
So, you know, many people may not lump esports together with other sports like football or basketball, but do you consider esports like a sport, and are there any misconceptions you would like to clear up?
I would consider it a sport just because I think we do anything any other sport would do. I mean, archery is not exactly the most physical sport, but I would say you watch film, you have a coach, you have tournaments. I mean, I feel like right now, at least, it is equivalent to any other sport.
Yeah, and just to kind of play devil's advocate to that, while archery might not be like the most physical sport, it does also involve like some sort of physical training. Like, right, you are working, you know, certain aspects of your body. Whereas esports, I feel like, is becoming more. It's obviously there are things like that match up with other sports, as you stated, but on the physical side, it's not necessarily equivalent to some sports. How would you say that you've gained like some understanding of, well, this sport, you know, esports is starting to become a real sport? Like, how would you clear up that type of like physical misconception maybe people have about the sport?
I would say probably having to do with, I think it is, there's a physical aspect to it. I mean, my wrists, I do wrist stretches every single day. Hopefully they don't get injured, but there's a lot of people have wrist injuries in Fortnite. Other video games. I mean, it takes a real toll on your hands to play video games at a competitive level. I think not only physical, but mental ability to play video games at a high level. I mean, it's very mentally taxing to go through 8 hours a day, get on the next day, not get burned out. So I think there's definitely some differences, but I would say it's kind of on the same track.
Do you feel it has like more of a mental aspect to the sport than other sports would?
I don't know if I'd say that, because when you're playing Fortnite, it's you and yourself, not really any others unless you're playing a team game mode, but you can't really talk to the competition. It's more you're in your own headspace, and that I would say is the difference.
Yeah, so maybe just to go against what Sam was saying, you'd also say like the hand-eye coordination is big, and you are moving with your hands very quickly. I think that's very interesting. So I would say esports is definitely being recognized more and more as an actual sporting event.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think like you practice your reflex times, you train, stretches. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that make it very similar to just any other sport.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill. I'm sure that if I played against you in Fortnite, you would probably kill me.
Yeah,
I would love to watch that.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll put money on it.
I don't know if you want to do that.
I don't.
But yeah, yeah.
So to dive in a little bit more about like specifics of Fortnite, right? So there's a lot of like casual Fortnite, right? That, you know, if you played Cavit, you'd be playing casually, like you just hop on. And there's more of a competitive side. What are like the main differences specifically in those two games?
Whoa, I don't want to knock my own ability. I was a season 2 player. I have the Skull Trooper on my account.
That's pretty good.
Continue.
I would say when you guys came in, you guys noticed that the zone, when it's really yes. small, there's a lot of people.
Explain
in that
what
zone.
That would mean for someone who doesn't watch Fortnite.
Basically, if you never saw Fortnite before, 100 people go into the map. They all drop kind of very far around the map. But then once it kind of advances the stage and the circle gets smaller, there's not too many people in the casual side because they're not playing for placement, kills. They're just playing kind of for fun, so they'll just run around the map and do whatever. But in the competitive side, when the zone shrinks, there's at least 50 people in that small half and half zone. How would I explain that in casual terms? Basically, in competitive Fortnite, there's just more people in a smaller amount of space.
Would you say you're more of a builder or more of a fighter in Fortnite?
I think those great two question. Things go hand in hand in Fortnite. You have to be a great builder to be a great fighter. But yeah, I'd say my mechanics are above my in-game sense, I would say. So I heavily rely on my mechanics, which is building, aiming, that sort of thing.
Do you have a favorite location on Fortnite? Or how about this, a past favorite location? Maybe.
How do you feel about what they've done to the game?
I enjoy the seasonal updates, them changing the map around. I mean, it is kind of annoying. Like, pick a spot, you'll practice that spot, that drop spot. I used to go to Sleepy Sounds. So it is kind of difficult in a competitive sense to practice a spot for so long, like a few months, and then that place just get totally obliterated, and you have to practice an entire new spot. But I would say season 1, definitely Tilted Towers, obviously. Mm-hmm. Love going there, getting a lot of kills. But on the competitive side, it changes all the time. So
I would have to say my favorite all-time location is Flush Factory.
That if we're going, is a good
if
place.
If we're going around, yeah. Moisty Mire, I was a big Moisty Mire.
Yeah, I was a big Moisty
Sky
Mire guy
base
too.
Action. Mm-hmm. Sky base with the fellas.
What do you think, Sam?
I'll say Loot Lake was also pretty good if no one else was dropping
Loot
there.
Loot Lake is good.
Yeah, I was a Loot Lake guy, but I also probably am one of the all-time terrible Fortnite players, so I don't take any of my advice. I think I probably had like 4 wins, and probably 3 of them came against computer bots. So don't let me get hot on the sticks, though, is all I'll say. But yeah, I mean, thank you, Josh, for coming on. It was great having you. And yeah, I mean, if anybody else has anything they'd like to add.
Yeah, one more question. Mike, you got some?
Yeah. I'll go. So, you know, you're only a freshman in college right now. Obviously, been playing Fortnite for a while. What do you think your future is?
Honestly, depending on how I do in these collegiate tournaments, I think I might have a path to play or at least coach at a competitive level in the future. Just really depending on how I see myself and especially how the esports industry goes. Maybe not a player, but as a coach, an analyst, something like that. Maybe something I want to get involved in the future.
Looks like we're going to have to get some autographs before you go.
Maybe.
So
how
involved are you like in the actual Fortnite community with other people?
I used to be a lot more than I am now. Now it's kind of you're more just in the Fortnite collegiate community, which is a small – it's more like Fortnite's more casual-based now. But I wouldn't say I'm that involved anymore, at least in the Fortnite Fortnite seeing like community, knowing people, but I used to be at least.
Here you have it, guys. Next member of FaZe. Would you like to plug your Twitch?
Twitch Clue2FN is my Twitch.
That's KLU for those.
KLU. And then follow Terps Esports on everything at Terps Esports.
There we go.
Best of luck to you the rest of the season, and we'll be sure to keep updated with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Let's get into the show. You just heard Josh talk a little bit about Fortnite and what he's been doing. It was a pleasure to go into his gaming studio, into his bedroom, gave us a little bit of a tour before the interview. Just quick around the table here, what did you guys think, and what are your now perspectives on the esports team?
Yeah, fun fact for all the listeners out there who don't know, Brendan and I are roommates, and Josh happens to be our neighbor. I thought the interview was great. It was very constructive. Learned a lot about the ins and outs of the esports squad at the University of Maryland. I thought it was a really great experience. Really enlightened me.
I thought the rise of esports that he talked about a little bit was interesting, with like the advertisements coming in now, all the sponsorships. I thought that was pretty cool to hear about.
Yeah, I think Matt asked a great question, kind of about is esport, does he consider it a sport? And then he kind of brought up some of the physical aspects, talking about wrist stretches, and that's something you don't hear about. So that was a cool little tidbit I got. What do you think, Sam?
Yeah, definitely. I think that Josh provided some really cool information. For one, I'm a little skeptical of like if esports and the validity of it being a sport, but some of his claims made sense and pretty reasonable in terms of what he had to say. And so I think that learning more about his sport and his journey, those are the type of things that I'm looking forward to hearing more about on this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. Those are the type of guests we want to see. Especially some of the stories you don't hear, not too much is heard about the esports team at Maryland. So leaving that back and looking forward to the weekend. Mike, you said that Georgetown was not the hottest thing on campus, and what happened there?
Yeah, in my article, I called it an annihilation. You can check that out at Terrapin Sports Network. But dominant 11-0 win over the Hoyas. It was a crazy record and stats game for the Terps. First of all, they had two players record hat tricks. That was the first time since 2019. They had players record hat tricks. So congratulations to midfielder BB Donrat and defender Riley Donnelly. They also held Georgetown to zero shot attempts. That was also the first time since 2019. And then it was also the first double-digit win for the Terps since 2008. And that year, the Terps, they won the national championship. So I'd say that was a pretty good year for them. They hope to replicate that.
I would say so.
Mm-hmm. Looking forward, they're going to be facing number 20 Rutgers on Sunday. Rutgers is 7-6 on the season. Strangely enough, statistically, they're one of the worst Big Ten teams in field hockey. They're averaging the least amount of goals per game, with only 1.4 goals per game. And then they're allowing 2 goals per game, the second most in the Big Ten. Yet, they're 4-5 against ranked teams. They had a win over number 3 Northwestern last Saturday. So they are a risky team to play, despite all the stats. That being said, Maryland's the best team in the Big Ten. They're averaging the most goals per game, 4.35. That's the most in the Big Ten. It's one goal more than the next team. So I think if Maryland just gets the offense going, it should be a good win for them over Rutgers.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. I mean, I think that when you look at the field hockey program, they're really starting to figure stuff out and see if they can continue to ride their hot streak into the rest of Big Ten play.
I will say, after Rutgers, the gauntlet continues for them. They're going to face number 4 Penn State at Penn State. Then they're going to play number 6 Virginia, and then they close out the season number 13 UConn. And then after that, they got the Big Ten tournament. So it's going to be a couple rough games for the Terps to close out the season.
Yeah, big test for the Terps. Kicking into soccer. So a quick recap for the men's soccer team. They were unable to beat Northwestern last week. They were without top scorer Malcolm Johnston due to injury. However, Stefan Capetti equalized late from a Nick Richardson cross, who maintains his quality attacking form. Richardson with 1 goal and 3 assists in his last 2 matches, as the Terrapins extend their unbeaten streak to 8 matches with 6 wins and 2 draws. They're currently sitting atop of the Big Ten. Coming up this week against Wisconsin, Friday, October 14th at Ludwig Field in College Park, 5 o'clock p.m. This game will be televised on ESPNU. Wisconsin currently sits 8th in the Big Ten. Also coming up, we have High Point Monday on October 17th, which will also be in College Park. But focusing on that Wisconsin match, they are sitting 4-5-2 overall, 1-3 in conference play. They're coming off a draw versus Drake and a win over Michigan, where they came back from down 1-0 to win it 2-1. keys for Maryland this game would be to neutralize Jack Finnegan, who has 2 goals in his last 2 games. So he's finding his offensive heat. They got to limit the garbage opportunities. We've seen a few sloppy goals conceded lately. Going to have to create chances, see some creativity on the ball, especially from Hunter George and Josh Bulma. And we saw against Northwestern, it was pretty tough to get the ball moving in the first hour or so. So they're going to have to look to start hot if they want to get some goals early and then control the game. Got to be clinical in the final third and can't see so many opportunities go begging. Also, I'd like to say happy birthday to Coach Sasso Shirovsky,
who will be celebrating
his 60th birthday this Friday. Well, you know, we have seen Maryland play down to their opponents just like they did against Northwestern. We've been saying all season. So I think if Maryland sticks to their game plan, plays their game, control the ball, get a couple goals in early, at least one in the first half, then it should be no problem. But we've seen that beautiful game is not so forgiving after all.
Yeah, definitely. And soccer season obviously in full swing. Some seasons that are about to get going is basketball. And Kevin Willard and Brenda Fries made their way out to Minneapolis along with some players for Big Ten Media Day. Just kind of a quick recap. Maryland men's basketball, according to Brendan Quinn on The Athletic, who runs the Big Ten doesn't do an official preseason poll, but they they compile writers from every team and do like a unofficial poll. Maryland was picked 10th to finish in the league, but it was a wide disparity in terms of where they were projected to finish. And Kevin Willard's confident with his team. He likes the fact that they have Dante Scott, Hakeem Hart coming back, along with some key transfers in Jameer Young, who is coming from Charlotte, Jameer Young, who's coming from Charlotte, and then this is a real one, Jahari Long. So you can get those confused oftentimes this year, but we're going to try to make sure that stays solid, along with Donald Carey, who comes from Georgetown. And all three additions are going to provide shooting. Young actually averaged nearly 20 points per game and probably will replace Fats Russell. Their games are pretty comparable, I would say, both smaller but quick guards who take a lot of shots and are going to have to rein it in a little bit in order for Maryland to be successful this year.
Yeah, Sam, do you know what's at the top of that poll, the preseason poll?
Yeah, so Indiana is considered to be the favorite. Wow. But Illinois and Michigan also receive first place votes. The Big Ten, in my opinion, there's not really an elite team at the top. It's a very balanced league this year, I would say. And so I think Maryland has some headway to rise in those rankings, especially if the transfers can get acclimated and Hakeem Hart can take a big step. I would look at him as somebody who, under Willard's new system, really can thrive in a kind of a secondary ball handling role. But moving on to women's basketball.
May I mention Big J journalist over here covering women's basketball for Terrapin Sports Central.
Yeah, well, just trying to follow in your footsteps there, Big Mike.
Thank you.
But the women's basketball team went, and Abby Myers and Diamond Miller followed Brenda Fries to Minneapolis. They had some very interesting quotes. Brenda Fries talked a lot about positional flexibility. We all know about the transfers they brought in.
If you want to learn a little bit more about the transfers, turn into the left bench on August 24th.
Yeah, that'll be me and Brendan kind of giving a little bit of information about the new people that have been brought into the program. But back to that, they had some serious losses last year, losing 5 of their top 6 scorers from last year's season. But they brought in some new guys, Abby Myers, who is Ivy League Player of the Year. And then they also have brought in 2 SEC transfers. Lavender Briggs is going to be the key one. She's in some of the practices I've attended, she's been lights out from deep, and she provides some flexibility in terms of lineup that Brenda Fries can run out there. So I'll be interested to see in what Maryland does this year. The Big Ten is loaded in the women's side. Iowa has Caitlin Clark, who's most likely her or Paige Buechers, I believe, or Paige Beckers, is going to win National Player of the Year. So that'll be a test. Indiana's always good. Michigan is good. So they're looking forward to the competition in the Big Ten and non-conference as well, as they have the 2 teams who played in the national championship. They're both coming to College Park, so that'll be a very cool chance for fans to come out and see how the new transfers gel early on.
Yeah, if you want to talk about a test, that's it right there. You get 2 of the biggest programs coming to College Park, and those should be exciting games.
Exciting times.
Big shoes for those transfers to fill after Angel Reese transferred to LSU.
The team who faced another big test was the volleyball team. And, Brendan, you want to take us through what they went through this week?
Yeah, first of all, about volleyball, thank you very much for the follow on Twitter. I do really appreciate that. I had mentioned...
Shameless self-plug.
Well, you know, I got to do it. I had mentioned last week that I thought that Maryland volleyball could get get it done against Rutgers, and they were able to get their first win in the Big Ten, winning 3-0. So that's a positive for the team right there. And moving on to the weekend, Maryland faces Northwestern on Friday in Northwestern, and they face Purdue, who's 11th in the country, on Sunday. Northwestern's been a pretty similar team to Maryland. They were actually able to win a set against number 6 Ohio State, similarly how Maryland was able to win a set against number 3 Nebraska. So they both have that potential to, you know, play up against high opponents and win sets. So when they're facing each other, it should be a much more interesting matchup. And then Northwestern had 3 players in double-figure kills in the game against Ohio State, so it'll be another chance for Raynell Jones, who actually got the all-time Maryland block record, to get some more blocks. As well as, speaking of blocks, Maryland continues to lead the nation in blocks this season.
Yeah, Maryland volleyball getting their first Big Ten win. Team who kind of struggled to get a win last weekend was the football team. We're not going to talk about the referees because we are, we're not going to talk about
it. We don't ref the games.
That's right. But they do have another opportunity to get a Big Ten win this week as they play Indiana. What do you guys, Cabot, what do you think about this one?
Honestly, I have not been following Indiana very closely
this
year.
They're not great.
I think
a lot of people are following Indiana football, to be honest.
I saw the Terps, what are they, minus 11 and a half? So,
yeah, I believe so.
Just get that electric offense going and it should be no problem.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana's offensive line is atrocious. Actually, after the game they played against Michigan, where Michigan had 7 different sacks by 7 different players, they fired their offensive line coach next week.
That's usually not a good look.
Yeah, so there should be plenty of room for opportunity. And the guy who I would look at on the defensive line is Jayshon Barham. He was Big Ten co-freshman of the week last week, as he had 2 sacks and a forced fumble against Purdue. So look for him to scream off the edge and sack Indiana quarterback Connor Bazelak.
I will say the matchup's very good for Maryland. Indiana's defense is among the worst in the Big Ten in almost every metric. They've allowed the most points per game. They're allowing the 3rd most yards per game. And then on the flip side, Maryland's averaging 34 points per game. That's the 3rd most and the 3rd most yards in the Big Ten. So I think it's going to be a very easy matchup for Maryland's offense on Saturday.
Yeah, it's the type of game that past Maryland teams, you'd look at Indiana middle of the season and you'd think maybe they're going to get this one get away. And Maryland fans are definitely going to hope that that does not happen because of their hot start this season.
I would say, though, the win's kind of been taken out of the sails of Maryland fans.
Absolutely.
Last week was probably their best crowd that they've gotten at now SecU Stadium. But that loss, it seemed to do a lot in terms of spirits because, you know, it's a big family weekend. Everybody's here, and then you lose in kind of the fashion that they did. And it seems as if a lot of fans that I've talked to, it seems like, well, it's just the same old, same old. So
well, let's see. I mean, they have the chance to move on to 5-2. Let's not, like, go crazy.
No, I'm not.
Right, I agree. But
like, B. Wizzy said.
Deflating loss.
It is a deflating loss at home.
The curse of a family weekend struck again, like B. Wizzy said.
I mean, if you're Maryland, you look at that game and you say, we need to win this. It's at home against Purdue, a division or conference opponent, and they couldn't get it done. Yeah. And so I think that this
and we
is
said we're not going to talk about the refs.
Yeah.
That being said, the penalty on the 2-point conversion was on the complete other side of the field. It had nothing to do with the outcome of that play.
I didn't know you could be illegally downfield from the 2-yard line.
Yeah, well, these are all things that we could discuss for hours. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
another thing we could talk about is the college football slate this weekend. And we have some.
We do that, Cav, what's that on your computer? You're the live Maryland.
Yes, I do.
Give us a quick update about that.
We'll bump over to women's soccer real quick. So,
oh my God, is that the actual score of the game right now?
That is the actual score of the
Maryland's
game.
Maryland's getting killed.
So, the Terrapins traveled to Ohio State, and they're playing right now. And currently, 7 minutes.
Mike
into
and Sam,
the
guess the score.
Half.
Guess the score.
2-0.
From an unbiased sports reporter point of view, from what you said, I would say they're losing. By a bit.
It's not pretty.
Yeah. It's 5-0 Ohio State right now. Ooh. Maryland went down 3-0 inside 6 minutes. They scored 30 seconds in, 4 minutes in, and at the 5:30
mark.
They scored 32 seconds in. And then it went 32 seconds, 4 minutes, 5:30, and then 11 minutes, and then 21. They were down 5-0 inside 22 minutes. Not good.
So what went wrong, do you think, Kev?
I mean, I'm not watching the game. I only have the live stats up here, but I can imagine that.
But from watching the team this season, what do you
I could imagine that all the players just stared into the sun really brightly for about 2 hours before the game because they must be blind.
I'll tell you what.
Or just severely ill because I don't know how this could happen. Yeah, so Ohio State is ranked 20th in the nation, but a 5-0 loss, it could very well end up being 6-7-8-0 even. That's just unacceptable by Terrapin standards.
Agreed.
Upcoming, Minnesota, Sunday, October 16th, at Ludwig Field in College Park. It's a very winnable game, I would like to say, but after this result, it seems that the life is just sucked out of the Terrapins. Minnesota is currently sitting 6-7-1 overall, 2-4-0 in the Big Ten. They're sitting in ninth place, while the Maryland Terrapins are 12th. This will be their first meeting between the two teams since 2020, and Minnesota has an all-time 5-1 record against the Terrapins. Minnesota has been in some low-scoring games recently. The Terps should look to grind this one out. It's going to be a battle, and if I could pick one match on the schedule for the rest of the season, I would say this one is one to turn the season around because something's got to change or it's just going to get worse.
To segue a bit, we're going on to a new segment called Shell Pick'em. So each week we're going to give three picks each for the college football slate upcoming, and then in the winter we'll see with like college basketball.
We're also going to do the Maryland pick of the week as we have, but just now we're going to integrate that into this section. So we'll give our Maryland
pick. At the end of the segment, we can pick the football game as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
So I'll start it off for us. My first pick is going to be Navy plus 12.5 versus SMU. Navy likes to keep games close. They're averaging 21.2 points per game, and they're allowing 21 points per game. They're also 3-2 against the spread. So 12.5 points seems like a little bit too much to be given to them. Then I'm going to take Tennessee plus 7. Tennessee, they're scoring the second most points in the nation. They're picking up the most yards per game. We don't know if Bryce Young's going to be playing. Is he going to be 100% coming back from that shoulder injury? So I think this is a good game for Tennessee. And then lastly, Vanderbilt plus 38.5 versus Georgia. Georgia is 3-0 against the spread when the line is under 30 and 0-3 when it is over 30.
Good stat, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Mike had some good analyses of his picks over there, but differently, I just did all my picks based on vibes. So I took West Virginia plus 3 against Baylor. Dude, I'm sure we've all watched the Tavon Austin highlight tape. Mm-hmm. Come on, what are you going to do? Like, West Virginia, come on. I got the Golden Gophers of Minnesota minus 6.5 against Illinois. And we got Wisconsin minus 7.5 against Michigan State. This one, I mean, Michigan State is just, they fell down a slippery slope. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, definitely. Michigan State's not very good.
All right, and to get into mine, I'll start. I have the opposite pick of you, Michael.
Mm. With all due respect, you're wrong.
Well,
head-to-head here.
It'll be played out. So Georgia minus 38.5 versus Vanderbilt. History does tend to repeat itself. Georgia won about 62-0 last year against Vanderbilt, and so I think we're looking for a similar result.
I have to say, when we were making our picks, I saw that you had Vanderbilt. I saw that you had Georgia, and I was like, damn, I was going to take Georgia, but great minds think alike, I guess. We'll have to see. Big Mike, you're going down. I'm riding B on this one.
something on the sixth floor over there at La Plata is cooking. So next, NC State.
Cooking with gas.
But that's illegal, so we actually don't do that. Don't check us, RAs. Okay. NC State plus 3.5 versus Syracuse. Syracuse is ranked. They've had a very good season, but they haven't faced a team like NC State yet, and I'm looking for them to get a little bit blown back on their heels, and I think NC State's going to win that game. And then my final pick is Kansas plus 9 versus Oklahoma. I know that's a...
Wow. That
bold.
Disagree.
And I didn't even get to finish my pick before I got cut off. Kansas has had a very strong season. I don't think they're going to let it slip away.
Their quarterback isn't playing. You know that, right?
Yep. Plus 9, Kansas.
Oklahoma's not had a great season either.
Jalen Daniels, who's the reason Kansas has been so good, is reported to be out for the year.
With
so.
His shoulder? No, they said that.
Yeah, but he's not playing this week.
Okay. Feeling pretty bold there across the table.
I would. That's the pick I most highly disagree with. I like Oklahoma to cover and potentially win. But moving on to my picks, we got. You guys took some obscure games. I'm riding with the ranked action for this week. There's a lot of good games going on in college football Saturday. My first pick at 12 o'clock, I like Michigan to cover the 7 spread. Coming to the Big House, Penn State, James Franklin has never won against a top 10 team on the road. I think that continues, and I think Michigan kind of runs away with it in the second half. I like Clemson, -4.5. I think that their defense is really starting to figure it out, and I'm just going to say DJ Uiagalelei. He's really starting to adapt to the offense, I think, and proving Clemson fans wrong who wanted him benched. And then lastly, I like Kentucky to cover the 6 points against Mississippi State. Will Levis, stud quarterback. Kentucky, they had a rough week last week, but I think they figure it out coming back back to home in Lexington. So I like all those picks. Those all should be pretty good games, and there's a lot of good ones going on this weekend.
Yeah, and then to add to the picks, let's do the Maryland football game. Let's give a score.
Yeah, a little rapid fire here.
Yep. All right, 32-24 Maryland.
Yeah, I like 35-21 Maryland.
I'm going 45-17.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would like to take Maryland 28-10.
Low scoring. Should be a good one. I think that Maryland gets back on the.
I think it'll be a pretty ugly game, but I think Maryland.
Okay, that's fair. I think Maryland gets back on the winning trail. You want to talk about a thing that's not an ugly game? That is actually going to be one of our segments that we're going to continue. And Cavi, you want to tell us, introduce us to the segment this weekend?
Yeah, we're talking about the terrific Terrapin. We're going to tick back the clock, ladies and gentlemen, all the way to 2006. Sam, take it away.
Yeah, so recently this weekend, Christy Tolliver was introduced into the Maryland Athletics Hall of Fame as the notorious WNBA player made her way back to College Park. Kind of some background about Tolliver. She was actually a highly regarded recruit out of Virginia. She won Gatorade Player of the Year in Virginia and was also a part of the McDonald's All-American game. So when Brenda Freese landed her, it was considered to be a coup at the time, and I think looking back on it, it still would be. The ladies' program was almost always a tournament team, but until Tolliver got to Maryland in 2006, they had not made the second weekend, which is the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight, of the tournament in 14 years, and Tolliver changed that. While she started her freshman year slow, her talents could not be held down for long. She really started to get going in the ACC tournament, scoring 17 points against number 2 in the country, the Duke Blue Devils, which led to a preview for later games. And she led the Terps to the ACC tournament win. And then the big dance, frankly, she just dominated. At first, she had 16 points in the Sweet 16 against defending national champions Baylor Bears. They're always a strong program, so for her to burst onto the scene like that was impressive. And then in one of her more memorable outings, she actually had flu-like symptoms. She was quoted saying, "I just felt awful." And a lot of people compare it to the Maryland women's basketball flu game, as notoriously known by Michael Jordan. Yet she put up 28 points against Utah in the Elite Eight. And then the thing she's most notorious for, the Terrapins found themselves down 3 against Duke in the national championship game. But before we talk about that, we're going to flash back to an early season November game that they played against Tennessee and Pat Sumlin, who is, rest in peace, one of the greatest women's basketball coaches of all time. And the Vols obviously were a highly ranked team, but Maryland found themselves down 2 late in the game. The ball found Tolliver, you know, as it does, you know, with the star freshman. But she ultimately passed on the shot, later saying that, "In my mind, I instantly was like, I deferred. You're a gamer. Scoring is what you do, but you deferred. Why is that?" That's a quote from Christy. And she said she couldn't stop thinking about that game. So, when Tolliver found herself on the biggest stage in women's basketball in the national championship game, down 3 against a conference rival, the thing we all dream about when we're playing in, you know, the backyard or shooting hoops, you know, you get down 3, you're hitting a little step back. What did she do? Well, as she elegantly put it, she said, "The whole time, I was pulling." Famously, Tolliver's shot went in, and Maryland went on to win their first national championship in program history. Cavett, take us away for a little rewind of the audio of that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that pretty electric. And, you know, since that famous shot, Tolliver has made a name for herself in other aspects of you know, her career and in life. She was drafted third overall in the 2009 WNBA draft and eventually went on to become a two-time WNBA champion. And then something that I found really cool was she found herself eventually on the bench as a coach, mm-hmm. and she became the assistant coach for hometown Wizards and then the Dallas Mavericks, actually becoming the first active WNBA player to become a coach for an NBA team.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, we've seen that also from the likes of Sue Bird, who's joined the Denver Nuggets bench.
Yeah, super. She kind of started a trend in a way, and it's super interesting. And you know, she's done all these notorious things right in her life, but she draws a lot back to her time at Maryland. And so a quote from her from this weekend was, "It's all about the people for me, and at Maryland I had the best people. I was engulfed by selfless people who were all about the greater good, and everybody was in it together." And I just think that her impact both on the women's basketball program, they've really turned into a powerhouse ever since that, you know, that shot and that national championship established Brenda Fries as, you know, this top tier coach, and also the program is a top tier program, and I think, you know, it's really cool bringing famous alumni like her back to the program for Maryland.
Safe to say she's got Maryland pride.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, really, really loaded slate this weekend. I'm excited to get this content out for you guys so you can all hear. And yeah, Cav, take us away.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. This has been Under the Shell, presented by Terrapin Sports Central. As always, enjoy your evening.